Welcome to Books, Beauty, and Business. Our goal is to inspire, motivate, and encourage others through laughter, accountability, success stories, most importantly, easy steps for achieving greatness. My name is Tawny Bro, and today I'd like to introduce you to Lisa Solak. She is an expert career consultant specializing in the performing arts. You guys are going to love this. First, a quick shout out to our sponsor. Thank you so much, Success Headway Advertising and Digital Marketing Automation Systems. They created a great checklist for your website, and you can find that on their website. Tips for higher traffic and online presence. Get yours today at Success Headway. So let me tell you a little bit about Lisa Solak. She has been in this industry for the last 4 decades. And what she does is she helps hundreds of clients, minors and adults, to gain professional representation and have successful careers in the performing arts. And I'm talking Broadway, film, TV, commercials, print, voiceover, commercial dance, music, like all the performing arts and all the things. So what she does is she helps them really navigate with, you know, the children and the parents, as well as, you know, young actors, singers, and dancers. She helps them launch their career and basically gives them the insight, guidance that you can't get anywhere else, like the dirt on how to be successful in the performing arts industry. She has a great podcast herself called Making It Happen. I hope you guys tune in. This is really good, and especially if you are an aspiring performer at heart.
Okay.
Stay tuned.
Well, welcome. I'm so excited to have you here today. Welcome to Books, Beauty, and Business.
Thank you so much for having me, Tawny. This is wonderful, a wonderful opportunity to speak with you, to tell my story.
Absolutely. Well, on that note, that's really like how I love to get started, just to learn a little bit more about your story. Your title is super intriguing already, so I'd love to hear how you got here.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I could go way back to the beginning when I was a young kid. I mean, I literally couldn't wait for friends, neighbors, and relatives to come to my house so that I could produce a show with all of them, whether they wanted to be there or not. I would try to recruit them and do all of that. So I was very much interested in performing arts from a very young age, almost as if I had done it in a past life. So that has been something that I have immersed myself in as much as possible from a very young age. What's interesting, though, is that I had two very academically oriented parents. Mm-hmm. My mom was an accountant and tax expert for corporations, and my father was an inventor. He was a mechanical engineer, and he created machinery that is all over the world that has changed the face of the printing industry. So they were very academically pushing myself and my brothers. And so it really wasn't something that was viable. At least they didn't think that the performing arts would be something that would be viable or even respectable, because back in that time, there wasn't an internet. Mm-hmm. So we were very much influenced by the people around us. And so the information wasn't always there. I wasn't born into the performing arts. So certainly a lot of people feel like that's the way you get into the performing arts industry. You're born into it. You have relatives that are doing it. You know, you somehow, I don't know, get discovered. You know, there's this closed door kind of gatekeeper mystique to it. And so I literally spent my entire young adulthood. So I went to college. I have a degree in biology and pre-med.
Oh, wow.
Yes, I'm a Renaissance girl. I definitely admit to that. That was very much because my parents wanted me to do something academic. So my collegiate years very much felt like an extension of high school, like something I had to do. And during that time period, I was sneaking into New York City. I was close enough to New York because I live in Western New Jersey, in the rural areas of New Jersey. And so I could, within 2 to 3 hours, get to New York. So I was sneaking into New York while I was at the university. I was just doing everything that I could to dance, act, sing. I was taking vocal training at the Met with a gentleman named Barbu Dumitrescu. He was Romanian. And I was doing voice lessons with him. And I was dancing at Broadway Dance Center and Steps, and just doing everything that I could to get trained in all of those areas. I don't know if I, at that time I was thinking that I would do anything professional. It was more of like, I just love doing this and it's just something I'm so passionate about. And so I lived in that space. Well, what happened was a lot of opportunities started to come my way. Like things just kind of fell in front of me and I said yes to them. However, even though I found myself doing choreography for the Met, for a comic opera that was being done, Giancarlo Menotti was coming over for his 70th birthday from Europe and he was doing his comic opera called The Hero at the Metropolitan Opera. At the time, it was closed. I don't know if you would remember, but some people listening might remember when they closed it and they were doing some of the performances in the Lincoln Center Theater, which is where this performance ended up happening. And I ended up choreographing it.
Oh, wow.
So what was crazy was these things were happening. Mm-hmm. And yet, and this is a perfect example of, you know, at the time, people just didn't know and I didn't have the guidance. I didn't have the right mentors around me. I was literally in the elevator with Robert Redford, with Carolyn Kennedy, with all of these very famous people who were there for the event, as well as the people that I was working with, the musical director and of course, Giancarlo, all of these people. And at the end of the weekend of performances, I called home to say, oh, it went great, blah, blah, blah. And my parents were like, you can't, don't stay in New York. New York is not a safe place for you to be as a young woman mm-hmm. without anyone else. So they didn't want me to stay for like the after party. So of course, anyone in any industry, you know that the networking, mm-hmm. that piece of it is so very important. So there were a lot of situations like that occurred. And I just didn't have the guidance and the mentorship to know what to do with it. Mm-hmm. So I didn't really end up landing in that space. So fast forward to, and of course I met my husband and we ended up getting married very early for today's time frame and what people normally do with, you know, settling down. So I settled down at a young age and I ended up opening up a performing arts school. So I didn't end up going into the field that I had trained at the university level. I ended up doing what I loved and what I was passionate about. And funny story, my father ended up helping to subsidize that to get it started. And so he did finally say, I see who you are now, you know? So I opened up the performing arts school and it was very successful. And I had had from a lot of these opportunities that I had in New York City, I ended up being able to help the staff members who were teaching for me. So teaching acting, singing, dancing at this big performing arts school. I was helping them get managers and agents. I was helping them find work. I was helping them build their resumes and introducing them to people. I became that person that I needed, mm-hmm. you know? And yeah. So I helped all these different staff members, many of whom ended up leaving my school to go to LA to work or to work professionally in New York. And then I started doing it with clients. So I started doing it with parents of the very talented students that were coming through the school. And that started right in the beginning. I was so young. Like if I had had a mentor or anyone telling me, why are you doing this? You are 26 years old. And you have a huge performing arts school and you're doing this for others, you should be doing this for yourself. But that wasn't even, it didn't even begin to enter my mind at that time mm-hmm. that I could be the one doing it. And I think it was just because of the upbringing.
Yes.
So, you know what I mean?
Yes.
And so, yeah. So I fell into this space of like, I love helping you. Not that I was living vicariously through mm-hmm. these people. I was just so joyful and so happy for them that they found their calling and that they actually had a chance.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of where everything sat. So the next thing that happened was my 10-year-old at the time, I had three boys. Mm-hmm. And at the time, the oldest was 10, my middle son was 6, and the younger one was 8 months old. So I had taken a step away from the school. I hired two managers. I had two locations at that time. I hired two managers to run my businesses because I needed to step away having three children and now this baby. So My 10-year-old said, "Mom, why can't I be on the cover of a magazine like Lindsay?" Because my kids were in the back room with me. You know, they saw what was going on. My 10-year-old could see what I was doing and how I was helping other people. And all my boys were very much into sports as well, but they spent a lot of time at the school. So if dad wasn't there to pick them up, I would say, go take an acting class, go jump into that tap class, you know, like your homework's done, go do whatever until I was done with work. So they kind of had a very broad exposure to activities because of the school and because we allow them to do sports as well. So I thought to myself, okay, I don't have to go back into the school just yet. Let me help them. Let me see if we can do this. So I ended up submitting them, doing exactly what I teach in my online courses, what I do with my clients. I ended up submitting them for representation with an agent. And I made a conscious decision to choose an agent because of how an agent functions. I had three boys. I didn't want to be running into the city 7 days a week. I wanted to be running into the city twice a week, maybe.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So I started out sending photos, and I had an offer for an interview for the boys with Ford Modeling Agency, which everyone pretty much recognizes that name if they're involved in the industry, and also Giller Roos. And Giller Roos, they also offered the opportunity to do commercial work. So I thought, okay, that might be fun for them. And I wasn't really sure how long the oldest one would even want to do this. So of course, when we did that, or when I called, they said, "Do you have any other children?" And I said, "Well, you know, I've got the 6-year-old and this 8-month-old. Oh, bring them all in." So here we were going into New York with the car, you know, the car seat and the stroller and all the things. And I was there and I walked into, I never forget going in there because there were giant wood doors with Giller Roos and brass letters on the doors. And they opened and you walked into like a waiting area that was like glass circular coffee table, glass end tables, like, and I thought, oh my gosh,
don't
I'm here. Here I am. No joke. Here I am with a little one who's just starting to pull himself up and wanting to walk and get out of the stroller, you know, and the 6-year-old, the 10-year-old. And of course, you know, the receptionist was at behind the glass, and we ended up, the kids ended up getting interviewed. And they went back one at a time until they asked me to bring the little one back in the stroller. And what was interesting was one of the persons who did have somewhat of a decision making part of this process was the person that was at the desk, because they were watching how I was handling the kids in the space, which is really a lesson to learn. Like I tell all my clients, you never know who is watching and what they're doing and how they're kind of making those decisions. So that was very interesting. And then when they called me in the back, they said they were interested in repping the kids. So we did print work and they did commercial work just a little bit here and there for about 8 months, 9 months. And then I had to get back into my business. I had to go back. And so we stopped. So they did get a little taste of it. And then I really needed to focus on the business. So we did that. And I told them, if you want to do this in the future, we have to train you. Like you have to really get focused on doing the dance or the voice or the acting. Like one of those three has to be your number one. And then the others, you could be, you know, maybe on the B team, maybe you're not, you know, as proficient. But if you certainly want to do this, if you can get your talent up to and your abilities up to that high level, that's even better. So they did that. They did sports. The older son did a lot of sports. And it wasn't until my younger two were 15 and 10 that the teachers at my school were pushing me. They were like, "Why aren't you calling for your son, Kurt? You're helping all of us. You're helping all of these students. You're teaching the parents how the business works. Like you're doing all of these things. You need to call for Kurt and get him back in." So that's ultimately what had happened. And it was funny because at the time, it's funny how major life changes kind of change your perspective, because my father had become ill and he was dying of cancer. And on his deathbed, he said to me, literally, I remember this like it was yesterday. He grabbed my arm and he pulled me closer to him. And he said, if you have an opportunity, say yes. He said there were things that happened in his life that he would have had an opportunity that was huge, but he was afraid of the risk. Yeah. And he didn't say yes. And so this was something that he was telling me, say yes to everything, like let it happen. Let things kind of organically happen and say yes. And then literally within a month after he passed, opportunity came knocking again. And of course, the rest is kind of history because we said yes, you know, and I made a call at that time for my middle son, Kurt, and my younger son, Kevin, who at the time was 10, they were 10 and 15, to get a manager. Because with using a manager in the industry, you can get through many different agents to get into a casting office or to get to the audition. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to give them every opportunity that I possibly could. So I said, you know, let's do the management thing. Let's see what happens. And the rest is literally history, because within a month, they were doing commercials, doing voiceovers. They were doing television. My youngest son was on 3 soap operas. The youngest son, Kevin, booked a Broadway show. So it was life-changing. And everyone who's in the industry, they all will tell you that all you need is one opportunity and the floodgates open, you know, which is literally what had happened. And I had done it and helped so many clients prior to, but this was the first time that I was actually seeing it and being in it, you know, and being in it with children, with minors, which is very different from being in it as an adult. And so I was able to see both sides. They continued to work and go to public school and have a healthy childhood and, you know, healthy teen years going to a public school. And they worked in every aspect of the industry and were lucky enough to work through the awkward ages, because there are ages that are sweet spots for minors and other ages that are a little bit more difficult to get work for, primarily because a 27-year-old can play 17. And so when you have a minor and they're 15, 16, 17, you can get someone much older. And so it affects, which we could get into if you want to, the details of all of that in the industry. But so they were lucky enough to work through all of that time. And the two younger ones still work successfully in the industry on Broadway, TV, film, all of it. Yeah.
Well, your story is so, it's inspiring, but it's so like almost circular, because you I can just see you as a little girl, like, you know, having that creative side, and your father saw a little bit of it, but the fear that he had, he kind of put it on you too, right? Like,
yeah,
we're going to go this direction with your life. You're going to go to this school. You're going to get this degree. And then not having the outlet for like all the passion that you had, there at the end, he was like, say yes. Like, that's beautiful.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
And what was wild too, is he was an inventor. So he spent a lot of time in his home. I wouldn't call it an office. I would call it, I don't know what I would call it, like workshop, I guess maybe is a better word, because he would be literally making machinery and creating things that were being patented. Yeah. So he had this creative mind that he applied in this very complicated mathematical field. Mm-hmm. And so it was my mom who would support any of those artistic kind of, that artistic itch I had all growing up. So growing up in school, do you know what I mean? Like, I was in the choir, and then I got picked to do the special solo, and then I was doing dancing, and I got, you know what I mean? So all of those things that were happening, my mom was supporting at that time. My dad was watching it happen, but maybe didn't understand a lot of it. You know what I mean? He didn't see it. He didn't actually see a lot of the recitals. He didn't see a lot of the performances because of his workload was so heavy. And it wasn't until then that he was like, you need to say yes for these boys. So I don't know if he had, I often wonder if he had not said that in that moment, whether I would have moved forward. I probably would have. I think if I had the opportunity for the boys, I probably would have, just because I was so passionate about it.
Yes.
I think I would
And
have.
You would have recognized that passion in them too. Because as a parent, it's hard. Like we have our passions and we're like, hey, why don't you try this? And we want our kids to like try and do the things we did, but they don't always grab it like we did. So So giving them the space to do that. But man, if you saw that little glimmer, you would just, we do the same thing. Well, you're changing lives then, because not everybody has like what you said, the guidance to understand step by step, what's the best route, what's the best way, or maybe, you know, just the encouragement they need.
Definitely. Yeah. It's interesting because some, you know, the parents that support it, I find, because I've been doing my live in-person seminars for parents of talented kids and teens and for young adults as well for over 20 years. Mm-hmm. It's probably 20, 25 or 26 now. And since COVID, since the pandemic, I started doing it virtually. So it became kind of like a webinar situation, and also developed the online courses during that time. But what I found from all these years of teaching parents, trying to make them understand, because they're afraid of the performing arts industry because they only hear what Hollywood TV, the news talks about, right? So the stories of the young performer who has the crazy parents and who ends up, you know, in a very kind of downward spiral and doesn't really live in the performance space in a healthy way. And so that's what they hear. But there's hundreds, thousands of people who are successful performing artists and have very successful careers, very healthy mental outlooks about those careers and during the process of living in that space. And no one talks about that, you know? And so that is something that I'm trying to change, that mentality, because once a parent listens and learns about the industry and how to actually do it the right way, they open their mind to the opportunity and the idea of even trying it, because it can be dabbled in. Like, you can, as a parent, if your child is talented enough and passionate enough and you have the time and energy to move them into the professional space, giving them, let's just say, opportunities a little bit beyond the average, you know, public school student, you can see whether or not they have the affinity for being on a set or being in rehearsal or being on stage 8 times a week. Mm-hmm. And you can kind of make all that work. And the actual systems that are in place are there to protect the children. So it's not a negative experience. It's very much a positive experience. And it also, I've also been able to give parents a little bit more insight, well, a lot more insight, that it is healthy and it can work and your child can go to a university program for musical theater, vocal performance, commercial dance, and they can then successfully move into the performing arts professional space. There's a little bit of like there's a bridge problem between the universities and the actual working in the industry, which is another kind of piece that I provide, because that also can be very tricky. And there's a lot of people that do go to university programs. They learn everything about the art, the performance, all the details of that, but they don't learn the business side and how to actually make that leap from graduation to having an agent or a manager, which is my space as well.
Yeah. Well, you covered a couple of things there, because the persona of it being so challenging or a rejection filled, like you're just gonna be rejected all day long. I was in sales, girl, I was rejected all day long. You learn how to, well, in sales, there's skills you can learn to become more efficient and more consistent and more everything. So it's interesting because that's kind of where my brain goes too, like, because that's what you hear, like, man, people go to all these auditions and they're just, you know, rejection after rejection. But then also that kind of what you had, what you went through with your picking your career in university, because your parents were kind of like, don't get this degree, because what are you going to do with an arts degree? Please get a business degree, you know, and trying mm-hmm. to still not squash dreams. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I think today it's a lot more, for some reason, I don't know if it's since the pandemic or if this was already kind of trending before the pandemic, but I feel like people are cool with, you know what? I'm going to let my child do a gap year. They're not going to go to university. They're going to continue to train in the arts and they're going to wait, you know, or they are, you know, they can always go back to school. They can always go and get a degree. And actually, in many cases, I don't think all the universities do this, but many universities, based on experience, they'll give you the bachelor's and you can actually go in for a master's based on your experience if you end up working first. So that is definitely out there for parents who are concerned about that. But there are, I find, a lot of my clients who are talented enough. Their talent sits within the 1-5% of what agents and managers will see in submissions for representation, simply because they were submersed in it through childhood and through high school. So competitive dancers, students who were very involved in their musical theater, in their high schools, in their community theater programs, and they were given very high level training. Mm-hmm. So like if a parent is going to pay for voice lessons because it's going to be an extracurricular activity, it will help them maybe get the solo in the school choir, which they like to do. And parents are just kind of trying different activities with their child. And if they happen to stumble on someone who is that talented as a teacher and coach, mm-hmm. then their child's getting the training that is going to be equated to what they need later. And that does happen. Like I tell a lot of pretty much all my clients, I say to them, you could have your child take voice lessons with the music teacher next door who's retired, who is probably very proficient at playing piano, and she can definitely teach them how to sing a song, and it's probably very inexpensive. But if you connect to top industry professionals, it's like anything else. If your child wants to play soccer professionally and you happen to connect to that coach who actually played soccer at the highest level, they're going to get much better foundation mm-hmm. for how to do it correctly. And it's very much apparent in the students coming out of high school programs, whether they're ready for a collegiate program, which is highly competitive. I don't know if you're familiar with how competitive getting into a collegiate program for musical theater or vocal performance or competitive or commercial dance. It's so competitive. They'll look at 3,000 candidates and they'll invite maybe 600 to 800 to come in and actually audition in person. And they'll pick 10 boys and 10 girls, 12 boys and 12 girls. And then if you divide that by ethnicity, you're vying for 3 spots out of 3,000 candidates.
Wow.
It is so highly competitive. So there's a whole space out there where people who understand this offer college concierge programs and just guidance of sorts. There's different programs, especially in the New York market. I also have done a lot of college concierge work, but I do it on a very small scale. So there are businesses that offer that. And it's definitely something, if there's someone out there and they're thinking their child wants to do this, and if they've gotten the leads in their school plays and they've done community theater and they're getting lead roles and, you know, singing the lead parts, definitely you want to hire someone who's going to help you with that process, because that's going to ensure that they land where they're supposed to land, that they're going to land at a Carnegie Mellon. They're going to land at Michigan. They're going to land at Pace. They're going to land, you know what I mean? Like at a top school. Mm-hmm. It's definitely a very highly competitive field for sure. But I think, can I say something else? I wanted to speak to what you said about the rejection. Mm-hmm. I totally get the sales thing. Been there too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What I try to do is I try to, when working with my clients, I try to explain to them that each time you go into an audition space, whether that's to do a self-tape recording, because we have to film ourselves to do self-tapes to submit for opportunities to come in the room these days, especially since the pandemic, or whether they're in the room performing, you have to look at it as an opportunity to share what you love to do with other people who love what you love, mm-hmm. and be able to perform and be a character and be doing what you love to do. And if you can kind of approach it that way, instead of approaching it like, I really need this job, I really want this role, I really want to, I want to win, I want the sale, you know, whatever it is. Instead of that, if you live in that headspace of, which is hard to do, I'm not saying it's easy to do, but I think how you prepare ahead of that performance in that audition space is really important too. Yes. Because if you put that time in, and if you live in that moment because you love it, not because, oh my gosh, I have to try to fit this in. I need to try to fit in memorizing the lines and then going over it and then thinking about the physicality and thinking about my relationship to the other characters and what's my objective when I say this line. Like if that's tedious to you, you need to change your mindset.
Yes.
It needs to be fun. It needs to be what you do. It's how you live. It's how you live and breathe. That's what you want to do with your time. And then it becomes a whole entire different animal. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the game, you win.
Yes. That is a perfect segue into our first question, because it's all about mindset, right? Like what you just said, like if that's what you focus on, that's what's going to happen. So I love that you said you bring your love and your joy and you share that with other like-minded people. I think that's perfect. So as you're motivating the masses out there with getting them ready for this type of, you know, career or this type of adventure that they're going to go on in the performing arts, how do you, where do you look for your own inspiration and how do you stay motivated?
Oh, interesting. That's a really good question. I think what I really love is I love when they win. I love when they achieve. And I love to dig deep into the minutiae of everything. So I enjoy the digging into the character. I enjoy, you know, helping them find. And again, you know, let me just jump to, I think this is part of my left and right brain fighting with itself. The Renaissance girl, you know what I mean? Because I have the math and science, I like to dot every I and cross every T. And I love to like dig deep into what these characters might be, what kind of side they should do when they're having to submit for representation, what side, meaning a little piece of the script. So anybody who's listening who doesn't know what that word means, basically in the industry, it is just a tiny little piece of the script. It's usually 2 to 6 pages that they'll send you for an audition.
Okay.
And so that's what that is. So I like to, you know, literally find the perfect character for them to play. And I love to kind of work with the clients in that way as well. I also do send my clients to top industry pros in the New York market, in the Atlanta market, in the LA market to work with, depending on where their location is and, you know, what their needs are. But I really enjoy all of the details of all of it. And I love kind of creating. It's not unlike when I love putting a production together at the age of 6 with all my friends, you know, like taking all those little pieces and putting it all together and having it become, you know, something magical. And the something magical is them having the opportunities that they've been dreaming of. And it sounds so kind of corny and profound and cliche, but that's really what I love. The detail orientation to get them where they need to go. And I think many of my clients, when I first talk to them, they don't realize what has to be done to end up having assets that you present that sit at the top 1 to 5% of what they see, you know? And they don't know what that barometer is either. Like, what is that scale? You know, if you look at the most beginner, let's say, I don't know, let's talk vocalist, the most beginner vocalist just learning how to sing versus the star on Broadway. What do I need to get from A to Z? You know, how do I get there? And where am I now? You know, where do I sit in that space? And that's something that also I address with people to try to make them understand this is where you are. You might need more training. So let's talk about getting the right training and then we can put the assets together and then you'll be ready. So I just like that process.
So you're really thriving off the success of your clients, it sounds
like. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
And oh, yes.
You're motivated to continue to
do. Yes. Awesome. Yeah, absolutely.
So how do you market your business? How do you let people know about what you're doing?
A lot of it is word of mouth. A lot of friends and people that I'm very tied into the New York Broadway scene through my own kids, the TV film space based on relationships that I created when my kids were in the industry and different opportunities that came my way as a result of that. Because what happened when they were young, we were on a set or we were at a rehearsal for a Broadway show and I had to be there because when you have a minor, you have to have a guardian, right? You have to have someone with the child. And so I would go and run my business from my laptop, from a hotel in New York City. And, you know, I would be doing that. And so what happened was because I was somewhat in the industry myself as well, because I was submitting myself for things when I was helping the students at my school. So there were times when I was getting to choreograph for, you know, for a project, or I was getting to help assistant direct for a project or produce for a project. So I was very kind of deep seated that way in as much as I could do with three kids at home and a business to run. And so where was I going with that? I lost track of where we were.
I just am amazed when I just think about females and how much we are able to do, like run a successful yes. business, have three kids, run around with our laptops, trying to figure it out. And
yeah.
And it yes. sounds to me like your business is very much run by word of mouth and definitely by being in the industry for so long.
Yes. So yes.
Marketing mm-hmm. is probably, yeah. that's probably your best way.
Yeah.
So if you had, a book that you would like to recommend, like you're like, you have to read this book. This is your okay. mindset book, or this is your, okay. you know, you go-to book. Do you have a book that you like to recommend to people?
Absolutely. How to Win Friends and Influence People.
Dale Carnegie, man.
Yeah, Dale Carnegie. Yes, absolutely. There's another one. I think it's, How to Gain Customers and Keep Them for Life or something like that is okay. another great one. Mm-hmm. That's another really good one. Oh my gosh, I have so many. I'd have to grab my phone.
Great ones. I'm going to research that, How to Gain Customers and Keep Them for Life. And then, of course, How to Win Friends and Influence People. I think,
you know what? I have
required reading in school.
Yes, I totally agree with you. And that book, I had my kids all read it when they were in seventh and eighth grade. And then they read it again on their own when they were in high school. And I feel like those types of anything like that gives you perspective and how others think and allows you an opportunity to put yourself in someone else's shoes is so important for young people, especially today, especially with the handhelds and how they kind of live their lives in that space. It's so important. Yeah. And I know what I was going to tell you before, whenever I was on a project, they welcomed me with open arms. Mm-hmm. And so I ended up getting closer to the creatives in that way. So those relationships have really helped. I also, with the online courses now, I'm doing some advertising online through Google, through Facebook, you know, social media, Instagram, that type of thing.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have to have a social media presence as much as I mean, I obviously run an agency, so that's what I have yeah. to do. But I also have a nice balance of unplugging myself.
Yes.
Totally.
Yes.
Yes. So what is your favorite beauty tip?
Oh my gosh. Beauty tip. Goodness. I think don't be afraid, depending on your body type, don't be afraid to wear what you want. I think it's important. I think I have struggled.
Age? Are you saying at any age I can wear whatever I want?
whatever you're comfortable with.
I love it.
Yeah. Because I think there's a space And I definitely was there, and I'll be quite honest, and maybe there's some people that would relate to this. I lived my entire adulthood through having my three children with young women around me, young, you know, teenage girls performing, dancing. I had a performing arts school. So the majority of the people around me were always just kind of what the public assumes to be, or especially back then, assumed to be the perfect body type and what was necessary. And back then, I'm going to age myself for 1 second. There were literally charts of like height and weight for women that we had when I first opened my school, posted at the school for dancers who wanted to get into the dance company, because that's what the norm was. If they wanted to get into a Broadway show, if they wanted to become a dancer at a university, if they wanted to dance for the New York Knicks, like that was the norm. And I think as I aged, and definitely when my kids ended up on Broadway and doing all that work, my job went from being a movement oriented, you know, 40 to more hours a week doing movement choreography and all that, to being sedentary because I was running my business from the laptop in the hotel in New York. And I started to have problems with weight gain. And so I struggled with my weight. And so that became something that, because I lived in that performance arts space and in so much myself, and then as a studio owner, and then having to struggle with that, I had a period of time in my life where all I wore was black. And now I'm the last, since the pandemic and everything, I'm very much starting to feel like, and here, of course, I have black on today.
Yeah.
But but do you know what I mean? Like, I'm starting to see that, you know, you have to be yourself. And if that means, you know, to make you happy, wear what you want to wear, and, you know, and live in your true self, which I don't think I was doing for quite some time, but now that has changed.
Good. Oh, that makes my heart so happy for you too. It's exhausting being anyone but you, you know, it really is. And I feel like That's great advice. Okay. So what are your daily tips for success? And when I say this, this is kind of like, I have a routine, right? I like to get up and I like to, you know, try to whatever. So what is your daily tip? Like, you do this every day.
My daily tip is, before I go to sleep at night, I like to make a list then in my phone as to what I'm going to get done the next day. And excuse me, I'll put it in the calendar, and it keeps me on schedule and it keeps me motivated. And I have to say though, I am someone who loves to check things off lists.
Cross it off. Yep.
I am a list checker offer. And my kids laugh at me because I say this all the time. And some people have called me a workaholic. Like, I've been called that by relatives and friends, but I don't see it that way. I see it as being organized. And I think if I don't make my little list or check my list that I've previously made, then it's difficult to sleep. And I think sleep is so important. And if you're not getting like your 7-8 hours of sleep, I think that can affect your mental health and your physical health and your beauty, to be quite honest. They say beauty sleep, but I really believe that. And I spent a lot of years of my life living on 4 to 3 to 6 hours sleep. You know, we do as women, especially once you have kids and running a business and all of that. And we all kind of want to be superwoman and do it all. And I think it's important to kind of make sure that you have that space for that. So making my lists and checking things off help me to make sure that I have time for myself.
Great advice. That's great advice. Okay. So as we're wrapping it up right now, it was lovely talking with you today.
You too.
You're super ambitious and motivated. And I feel like that's encouraging to a lot of people. And do you have any additional motivation or advice for the ladies listening?
Oh my gosh. You know, I think you have to, we as women want to always help others, and we want everyone in our lives to succeed and be happy. And we tend to put others first, at least the women in my life and a lot of women that I have known over my lifetime have all been that way. And I think we do have to allow ourselves to think about who we are and what we love and what we want out of our lives, because you don't want to get to that point in your life where there's no time left and you haven't spent any on what you love and what you maybe dreamed of as a child.
Yes.
So sometimes it's nice to go back to that. So if you were someone who loved to paint and you haven't done it in 30, 40 years, mm-hmm. because you've been busy doing everything else for everyone else, not that it's specifically for everyone else, but it feels like there's nothing there for you. I think you need to fill your cup a little bit, mm-hmm. and it might be the time to go to the art store.
Yes.
Buy some paint and brushes and some canvas. Yeah.
I think that's great advice. I have really enjoyed talking with you today. Appreciate your time.
Of course.
We'll have all of your information below, your book recommendations, everything. If you guys are interested in learning more or finding out more from Lisa, she has her website, but also all of her information will be below. So thank you so much for your time today. I really, really enjoyed this.
Thank you for having me, Tawny, so much. And good luck with everything.
Thank you. Bye, guys.